I am Jude. Hi. And we have a little sitting group in Tacoma, so we don't need electronics there. Thank you again for inviting me here, although it does seem I show up around tragedies and change my talk topics. Last time I think it was the tsunami. So, of course, we must speak of the heart and compassion tonight. I think it's we have to do it. Apologize if I cry a bit. It's difficult. Our hearts are just aching. So, sure. Now, is the microphone actually working? No? Yes? Yes? No? Oh, you know what? It's upside down, and that would... Hello. All right, how's it? It's okay. All right, good. Thank you. Appreciate that. Get my microphone straightened out. So, it's actually a wonderful thing that we have as an aspect of our practice. We have some beautiful heart-opening techniques, compassion techniques from the loving-kindness tradition, and they can be such a comfort, particularly at these difficult times when our hearts are really aching. And then it is also true that our mindfulness practice has a tremendous capacity to heal the heart as well. I was surprised and really interested. My present teacher is a Tibetan Lama, Sopni Rinpoche, actually Sharon Salzberg's teacher as well. Last March, in Crestone, Colorado, at the retreat for the consecration of the stupa there to his father, Thukpa Urgyen Rinpoche, He had just completed living our life. He'd been living there for a year with his wife and his two daughters in Crestone, in a house, paying mortgage and sending the girls off to school on the bus and so forth, and also having a lot more ongoing contact with those of his Western students who were lucky enough to be living or visiting in Crestone. And he said that he got a stronger sense of what we're dealing with as Westerners. You know, he was born in India and grew up in Nepal and situations of Dharma, a nunnery where his father lived and monastery now and so forth. So he hadn't really lived our life. So he did that for a year, and he had a lot of compassion for us, he said. And he said that what he felt was that so many Westerners have an experience of wounded love. He said that's what he called it, wounded love. And then later also we're speaking of the wounded heart. But first he used that phrase, wounded love. And then he said that actually our mindfulness practice, or in the Tibetan tradition, those of you Tibetan tradition, they would call that the shamatha. But shamatha practice is leading to vipassana. That's the kind of Sanskrit pronunciation. And we have our mindfulness insight practices that we call our vipassana practices. But similarities and techniques, of course, all the same teacher, the Buddha. He spoke of our mindfulness practice as actually helping us to heal this wounded heart just by learning, training to let go. And there's this wonderful poem, which I can't remember, of course, who wrote the phrase, let go of the stream of distress and return our attention to just simply this body we are so distracted from it and so called out of it in so many ways, both in our education with the tendency toward, the complete immersion in conceptualizing, but also just in ordinary life, so much worry, so much concern, thinking, remembering, planning, all of these things that come up that from such a young age have pulled us out of the simple awareness of body sensations and breath sensations. And so our practices, whatever techniques we have, they have the general quality of training us and helping us to train to notice the mind's distraction and let go of that story, whatever it is. And I say that that's our renunciation practice. You know, we may not be monastics with shaved heads, but to renounce these juicy daydreams or the planning. You know, you may have not had a moment's stillness all day long, so we sit still and immediately the mind says, okay, good, it's quiet, we'll plan tomorrow, you know. So the planning mind or the worrying, the remembering, all of these distractions, when we're doing our practice, we kind of come awake, of course, inside the distraction, and then that's the moment we practice renunciation. We renounce the distracting thought, the whole storyline, that whatever the story is, in that moment, seeing it and letting it go, and then guiding our attention back to simple breath sensations, body sensations, sensations of sitting and touching. And as we do this again and again and again, we actually restore ourselves to ourselves. And it's tremendously comforting and healing for the heart to just be able to let go of all of that, the stream of distress, and be here with this body in this moment. They call it bare attention to bare sensation. Just sitting, touching, breathing, pleasant, unpleasant, resting, a deep rest with mindfulness in this present moment. So our mindfulness practice also is tremendously healing for us and for our hearts as well, to be able to train in calming ourselves by anchoring our attention in an oasis which we carry with us, this body, this breath, this moment. And then, too, another aspect of our mindfulness practice is, of course, our training leading onward to, we call it liberation, freedom from suffering. And so that is actually also just such a wonderful aspect of our training, of course, mindfulness leading to the arising of insights and so forth. But if we just focus solely on that aspect of the practice, then we actually, a kind of a subtle and then maybe later not so subtle attitude that starts to exclude, a kind of nihilistic almost. We may be getting very strong in our practice of letting go, and letting go of attachment. But what can happen is that we might start to see everything that happens in terms of not being attached to it. And you can see how that can drift off farther afield into a non-concern, a disconnect, or even trying to get rid of situations. And even in our experience, of course, you've probably had that where we have a distraction that keeps coming up, and then later we find ourselves kind of trying to get rid of it, and we start developing aversion to attachment, or aversion to aversion, or aversion to, so we can go over to the other side. It's like our path of practice is we're always correcting toward the middle path. You know, we can go one stronger direction or the other, and then maybe fall off the edge of the road for a little bit. So coming back to that, our loving kindness practices, the practices of loving kindness, or the four Brahma Viharas, we call them in our Theravada tradition. In the Tibetan tradition, they're called the four immeasurables. Same four. those practices, the practices of cultivating loving kindness and compassion and sympathetic joy, the joy of others, about others' happiness, and equanimity or balance of mind. These practices and these trainings help us strengthen and open our hearts so that we don't go over too far into the distancing experience, or the experience of kind of developing a sort of an aversion for other people and their problems or the noises that might come, you know, when I'm doing my precious meditation, you know, the whole family has to be quiet, and the neighborhood, and so forth. So that sort of thing, our compassion practices, our loving kindness practices, help us to actually train in opening the heart and balancing so that we can, the wonderful, of course, symbol of the Dharma is a bird with two wings. So we've never seen a bird flying with just one wing. It just doesn't happen. It's a wonderful picture. The two wings of the Dharma are wisdom and compassion. And so, of course, our mindfulness practices and our insight practices help us along the path of cultivating wisdom. And then our loving kindness practices and the practices of the four Brahma Viharas help us to cultivate little by little, bit by bit, more compassion and more of an open-heartedness. Now, you know, sometimes with the loving kindness practice, we think of the word love and it feels a little bit either just too schmaltzy or else just too difficult. So if we think of kindness and kind-heartedness and learning how to, one teacher recently said, stretch our love. He was speaking of how we learn some love from family and friends and so forth. Sometimes that conditioning is very, very difficult and painful for some of us, and some of us more fortunate that we have a bit more of that experience. But however much of that experience we have, then as we walk the path of Dharma, we're learning to stretch whatever original love we have for whoever, maybe it's our benefactor, maybe it's just a dearly beloved pet, you know, but beginning to stretch that love, stretching it so that we can actually love ourselves more, and then stretching it outward to other beings until it can include all beings. And certainly all beings does include us. The Buddha said that a person who truly loved themselves would never harm another. Therefore, the time that we spend cultivating love for ourselves is actually very, very good for the world. It's not a selfish time spent at all, which some people worry about that. So we cultivate this ability to be kind in all situations, to stretch that love, to have an attitude of kindness. And it takes some time and it takes some practice, certainly. But little by little, with these wonderful practices that we have, we do find that it's easier to be kind or to choose kindness. When aversion arises, which it's going to do, we don't dwell in it. We choose not to dwell there, but to move in the direction of kindness and including kindness for ourselves as well as others. So I really encourage you, when aversion to yourself arises in self-judgment, criticism, disappointment, the struggles that we have with the judging of ourselves, don't dwell there. You know, of course, we can't repress these things. That's not part of our practice. But we see them arising. And then my image, everybody has a different image, but mine is sort of, you can see them knocking, hear them knocking at the door, go to the door, judgment, self-hatred, whatever it is, hello, just come on in here, and you kind of escort them, and then just escort them right through, and there's a back door, and then show them out, you know. So we don't dwell in aversion to ourselves and to other people. We see, we accept, and then we escort out. We let go as well. And that making that choice and instead choosing kindness for ourselves. And Rodney, when I saw him last week, he said that one of the people who's coming next year is Tara Brach to speak. I think it's going to be over at Nalanda Bodhi, which is where I'm doing actually Loving Kindness Compassion workshop Saturday. So there's a flyer on that. But so it's a lovely place. If you haven't been there, you'll enjoy being there. And Tara Brach's book, Radical Acceptance, is really, really wonderful. So if you have issues and difficulty and some suffering with self-criticism and judgment and blame and guilt and shame, the whole nine yards of that grouping, and you haven't yet read that book, you'll find it a really precious volume. She's both a meditation teacher and a psychologist or psychotherapist or, you know, and so, and also has gone through a lot on that in those areas personally. So the book is rich with really good information and guided meditations and reflections and so forth. Everyone, I teach the Insight Meditation Correspondence course. I'm in my eighth year of teaching that, so I have a lot of people I've never seen that I'm corresponding with, and they all, when I recommend that volume, just say how good it is and those points. So really, and then you'll have an opportunity to have time with Tara, too, when she comes. So, and then opening our hearts to others and training to open our hearts to others and seeing the habits of criticism and judgment and so forth that we do have. It's our habitual conditioning. It just, you know, comes with the package. I love, if you've heard Stephen Levine speak ever, he has this wonderful way of saying when someone comes up with some sort of human issue with that goes on in our minds, you know, our judgment, our criticism of ourselves and others, that sort of thing. He says, judgment, big surprise. And the way he says it, you know, like, of course, you know, this is human. We have all this stuff. And then he has another phrase he'll say, have mercy. And again, I love the way his voice, because it's very much this attitude of loving kindness, having mercy on ourselves and others. So our practice helps us actually train in these abilities. And there's a very nice breakdown of the training to do that. You may all have, or if you don't, Sharon Salzberg's book, Loving Kindness, The Revolutionary Art of Happiness. She was really my teacher in this area for several years, and she's also coming, too. So you'll have a nice opportunity, and I guess she was here at Best Year recently. So that book is a wonderful step-by-step outline of the loving kindness practices. And if you don't have it, I've got a little excerpt out there. I bring door prizes, you know. I think when I was a kid, you know, went to school and you had the handouts. So I like to bring handouts. So there's a little excerpt there, Facets of Loving Kindness. It's a chapter from her book, though, so if you have her book, you won't need to pick up a copy there. But there are a few other things around the loving kindness that I brought. On the flyer for this Saturday at Nalanda Bodhi. And on the flyer for the events that happen in Tacoma, if you happen to have anybody that you know in Tacoma, on the back of that, the loving kindness phrases are there, and that last verse that I said, happiness, causes of happiness, suffering, causes, they're written on the back. I've finally gotten smart. People always say, where are those written? So now I'm putting them on the back of flyers so that people will just have them if they want them to take home. But this loving kindness and then compassion practice. And so what I'd like to do tonight is give us another opportunity. I'd like to guide you through, once again, the loving kindness and the pattern of it so that you can see it again. And also so that we can respond once again, stretching our hearts south to just such pain and suffering and difficulty and devastation. To have our hearts open to people's suffering is an important part of our path. I mean, really, the Buddhist path is a path of compassion. So we do need to be willing to open our hearts to suffering. And yet, at the same time, also, we need to be able to comfort ourselves and protect ourselves so we have some balance and some equanimity so that we don't become also just overwhelmed and part of a helpless feeling. So our practices can do that for us, and they're set up in a way that allow us to learn how to stretch our hearts. And then what I like about them, and most of you will know, my comparison is we do the loving kindness practices, the compassion practices are designed just like weight training. You know, when you go into the gym weight training, they have you start with the lightweight weights. In my case, very lightweight. But that's what you spend the most time with, are the lightweights. You move along, and maybe just for the last couple minutes, you might use the heavier weight. But anytime you feel any stress, put that down, because otherwise you're going to pull a muscle and be, you know, incapacitated for a while. So the loving kindness practices are also set up like that. You train with repeating and directing the loving kindness phrases to the people that are the easiest in your life, the benefactor, the dear ones. And then little by little, you kind of stretch and you add other friends and you add neutral people. But always caution for the difficult category, which we all think, I should do it, you know, take on the most difficult people. But actually, just for a moment or two, at the end of a session, maybe the moderately difficult person, just like with the weights in weight training, and then come back to the easier. Seems a little odd, you know, but it is a happiness practice. And the fact is, just like with weight training, you know that all these reps with the lighter weights are going to result in your being able to pick up heavier and heavier weights. So it's exactly the same. The more exercise the heart is given, feeling love and loving kindness and compassion for those who it is easier to feel that toward, the stronger that ability gets. So that makes it kind of a fun, pleasant practice to do, because that's the given. That's the way to train, really. And then a couple of other things. With loving kindness practice, we think of it, again, the Buddhist teaching is so practical, so experiential, so even if you were a psychologist, you might say phenomenological. Saying this does this and that does that. It's not a system of believe this without any experience, but rather try this out. So with the loving kindness and the compassion particularly, what we do is we notice what the Buddha taught is that the proximate cause of feeling loving kindness is seeing the goodness in someone. So the proximate cause is the cause that's going to end up with the result. So, for example, you know, I could think about you know, knocking this down, or I could think about knocking that water down. I could sit here and think about it. You could think about it. We could all think about it. But the proximate cause of that falling over would finally be my finger. That's what a proximate cause is. It's the thing that tilts, that causes the result, the previous item. So the proximate cause of feeling loving kindness is seeing the goodness in ourselves or someone else. So one of the reflections, if we want to, if we can say, I don't have any loving kindness for myself. So then the exercise is reflecting on your own goodness, and your own good qualities. So as a practice, and this is, of course, again, in our culture, we're taught the exact opposite. You know, I don't know what kind of phrases you got when you were a kid, but I remember, well, don't break your arm patting yourself on the back. You know, that's one. There are various, you know, we get this feeling like somehow we're being egotistical or prideful. But in fact, in the tradition, the cultivating, reflecting on your own good qualities, because sincerely, you know, actually making a list in your mind or your journal, because that is the proximate cause for feeling loving kindness toward yourself and your own aspects of generosity and so forth. And then the proximate cause of feeling compassion, well, lately it's turning on your TV, right? I mean, the proximate cause in the tradition is seeing others suffering. So that will give rise to a feeling of compassion. So there are phrases, you know, the Native American walking a mile in another's moccasins, that sort of thing. We have in there this notion, if you can actually take the time to see another suffering, or even if you have no compassion for yourself or feeling very little compassion for yourself, then the reflection is, see your suffering. Allow yourself to see where it hurts. But certainly these days, we just have such an example of the heart going out to people in suffering. We just hear what's going on, and we feel that. It's the quivering of the heart in response to others' pain. That's what it's called in the tradition, the quivering of the heart in the response to others' pain. So in times when it's not easy to feel compassion, then if we can reflect on the suffering of others, that allows us to develop compassion. But now it's not, I'm sure, it's not an issue. It's just we are so filled with the news of such suffering and such distress that it's really easy for our hearts to go out. So what I'd like to do now is just guide you through the sequence, the tradition. Oh, wait, one more thing. I'm going to guide you through the sequence in a minute, but there are two things. I'm going to include also loving kindness for animals. And there are two things I want to share with you beforehand, which are on the back of one of those things I have out there. One is, of course, a traditional teaching. Who can pronounce the suttas? Kulavaga Sutta, verse 6. It's a teaching the Buddha gave in response to the monastics' fear. They were sitting in a forest, I guess, that was full of, the legend says it was full of snakes, and they were a bit nervous. And so the Buddha took this opportunity to teach loving kindness according to the number of feet a being has or doesn't have. And so it's beautiful. The verse is, for those without feet, I have love. I have love for all with 2 feet. For those with 4 feet, I have love. I have love for all with many feet. May those without feet do me no harm. May none with 2 feet do me harm. May those with 4 feet do me no harm. May none with many feet do me harm. May all beings, all living things, all who come to be, one and all, may they see every blessing may no evil at all come to them. So that's the lovely. And you can convert that, of course, if there's no fear, to may those without feet be happy and safe. May those with 2 feet be happy and safe. And then someone, a Catholic nun I know, sent me this lovely modern poem, which is a similar sentiment. It's called Benediction for the Animals. It's by James Collar. My paw is holy. Herbs are everywhere. My paw. Herbs are everywhere. My paw is holy. Everything is holy. My paw. Everything is holy. Sweet. So we'll include the animals as well in our loving kindness and compassion. Get comfortable. If you want to lie down, sit comfortably, loving kindness, compassion, these are happiness practices, so you don't have to stay still or in any severe posture at home, on the couch, at any time. Very comfortable. And then we can close eyes or lower eyes or not, whatever feels good for you. Traditionally, the loving kindness is begun with the forgiveness contemplation, so I do that little reflection. So you might want to silently join in that reflection. If I've hurt or harmed anyone, knowingly or unknowingly, I ask forgiveness. And if anyone has hurt or harmed me, knowingly or unknowingly, to the extent that I'm able to do so at this time, I extend forgiveness. And I also forgive myself. May my heart open. May I be happy and peaceful. May I be healthy and strong. May I be safe and free and able to care for myself with ease and joy. And then traditionally, as we did before with the loving kindness, we bring to heart and mind a benefactor. And the benefactor could be a traditional benefactor in the traditional definition of that term, or even a dearly beloved pet, or someone from the wider world, the Dalai Lama, Mother Teresa, Thich Nhat Hanh. But the key here for the loving kindness is that this being is a being who the very thought of will open our hearts, maybe even bring a smile, even if we're feeling grumpy. So that's the benefactor. That's why they're our benefactor. And then feeling how that feels so that we can train in the feeling of loving kindness, we direct loving kindness to the benefactor. May you be happy and peaceful. May you be healthy and strong. May you be safe and free and able to care for yourself with ease and joy. And you might repeat that for many, many minutes, a whole session. Then you can return to yourself for some time, directing loving kindness now toward yourself. And particularly if it's difficult for you to feel that, if you imagine yourself with your benefactor, either their arm around you or their paw, whatever the situation, that can help you feel loving kindness toward yourself. So it might be, may I or may we be happy and peaceful. May we be healthy and strong. May we be safe and free and able to care for ourselves with ease and joy. And again, one can do whole sessions just directing loving kindness to benefactor in yourself and even to parts of your body. You can send healing kindness to various parts of your body, ones in distress or just needing some tender-heartedness. And then again, one opens the heart outward once again to the dear ones in your life, one at a time or in groups. May you be happy and peaceful. May you be healthy and strong. May you be safe and free and able to care for yourselves with ease and joy. And then other friends, other relatives that didn't make the dear ones list, neighbors and so forth, the Sangha, students, teachers, clients, colleagues, that group. we open our hearts wider. May you be happy and peaceful. May you be healthy and strong. May you be safe and free and able to care for yourselves with ease and joy. And traditionally then we direct to neutral people, and we can pick one person that we don't know, or we can also radiate the loving kindness as from this place, north, south, east, west, above and below. Feeling and even visualizing loving kindness radiating through Seattle and eastward and north and south, above and below. And then also bringing in the other creatures, the animals, the birds, the fishes, reptiles, insects, spiders, tiny beings seen and unseen, born and to be born. May all beings be happy and peaceful. May all beings be healthy and strong. May all beings be safe and free and able to care for themselves with ease and joy. And then this is the time where traditionally one might direct loving kindness to a difficult person, not the major difficult, but just slightly difficult. And people change categories from day to day too. So we just for a moment, directing loving kindness to a difficult being. May you be happy and peaceful. Just as I want to be healthy and strong, may you too be healthy and strong. May you be safe and free and able to care for yourself with ease and joy. And that's the pattern of the loving kindness. And then tonight we shift also to the compassion practice. The compassion training has a similar sequence, except the first category, because the proximate cause of feeling compassion is seeing the suffering in beings, the very first category for that training is to think of one or more beings, a group of beings, who we feel their suffering easily. And of course now we know that our hearts just stretch out to all those in such difficulty and distress and grief, illness, and just all kinds, whatever kind of suffering, all kinds. In the Gulf states, and New Orleans, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, and all of their relatives and friends around the country and the world, our hearts reach out easily. So we know the feeling of compassion. We know how it feels, the quivering of the heart. And then we practice, we direct phrases of tenderness. May you be comforted. May you be safe. May you be supported. May you be surrounded with every kindness. I care about your pain. We care about this pain. May you be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May you be comforted, supported, cared for, healed. May you be surrounded with every kindness. We care about this pain. I care about your pain. May you be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May you be comforted, supported, cared for, healed. May you be surrounded with every kindness. And we think of individuals, and we think of families. We think of dearly beloved pets and all the other animals in distress. We send our care and kindness to the helpers and our compassion for the incredible stress and strain they're under. May you be able to get some sleep. May you be supported, cared for, comforted. May you be surrounded with every kindness. Stretching out our hearts in tenderness and compassion. May you be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. So we radiate this loving kindness outward to specific people, and then this whole group of suffering sentient beings. And then it's possible with the compassion practice also to direct compassion to others, our friends, relatives, those we know in some sort of difficulty or distress, and ourselves as well. May I be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May I be comforted, cared for, safe, supported, healed. May I be surrounded with every kindness. May I be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. And we can radiate compassion also outward again from this place, north, south, east, west, above and below, till we feel this compassion radiating to all beings everywhere. May all beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings be treated with kindness, surrounded by kindness. May all beings be comforted, supported, cared for, and healed. May all beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings be comforted, supported, cared for, and healed. May all beings be safe. May all beings be surrounded with every kindness. And again, as with the loving kindness, for a moment there we pick up a heavier weight. We bring to heart and mind one being or a group of beings that it's a bit difficult to feel compassion for. And just for a moment we stretch our hearts in their direction as well. Just as I want to be free of suffering, may you too be free of suffering. Just as I want to be surrounded with kindness, may you too be surrounded with kindness. May all beings be comforted and surrounded with kindness. Again, radiating that compassion to all beings, and particularly the dear ones in our lives, and those in distress who it is so easy as we see their suffering to stretch our hearts, to feel that compassion. May you be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May you be surrounded with every kindness. May you be safe. May you be comforted, supported, cared for, and healed. And then bringing our attention back to ourselves and our breath, resting in the body, the rising and the falling of the breath, we can also make loving kindness and compassion ride the breath. And so then it's easy in traffic jams and in the grocery store. Just simply on the inhale, may I be happy. And on the exhale, may others be happy. May I be happy. May others be happy. May I be safe. May others be safe. May I be surrounded with kindness. May others be surrounded with kindness. May I be happy. May others be happy. be happy. So as we breathe, we stretch our hearts like the air coming out, going out to all beings, loving kindness, going outward with the exhale to all beings, and then inward to ourselves as well. May I be happy. May others be happy. The Dalai Lama has said that it's a gift of being human that we can help others. And sometimes we may not be able to help with money or things, but we can tell them we care. We can give the gift of concern and caring. We can tell people we're concerned about their pain and their suffering. And then there are the people that are helping in so many ways. And again, in the Buddhist tradition, we know the karma of cause and effect. And we know that goodness gives rise to goodness. So also at the end here in our reflection and meditation, there's a beautiful blessing and healing chant directed toward those who are doing goodness in the world. So thinking now of all the people who are helping in this huge disaster and tragedy, we direct this blessing and healing chant toward them. Just as the soft rains fill the streams, pour into the rivers, and join together in the oceans, so may the power of every moment of your goodness flow forth to awaken and heal all beings, those here now, those gone before, those yet to come. By the power of every moment of your goodness, may your heart's wishes be soon fulfilled, as completely shining as the bright full moon, as magically as by a wish-fulfilling gem. By the power of every moment of your goodness, may all dangers be averted and all disease be gone. May no obstacle come across your way. May you enjoy fulfillment and long life. For all in whose heart dwells respect, who follow the wisdom and the compassion of the way, may their lives prosper in the four blessings of old age, equanimity, happiness, and strength. So coming back out of the compassion and loving kindness meditation, I just find these practices, they're both trainings and also tremendous comfort. Oh, there's time for questions if you have any questions. There's actually some time. This book, The Loving Kindness, Tara Brach. It's called, Tara Brach is the author, B-R-A-C-H, Tara. And the book is called Radical Acceptance. Very, very helpful. Lots of information, reflections, practices, exercises. really, really helpful for finding ways to heal this tremendous painful suffering of, in the biz, we would call it self-aversion. That aversion arises, and aversion can go out, of course, but aversion also arises and then, you know, takes the closest object, which is often us, so that we have patterns of self-criticism and guilt and shame and blame and so forth. And so radical acceptance is learning to, as I say, we accept these states as they arise, knocking at the door, but we can also escort them out the back way. So it's a paradox of our practice. Rather than trying to get rid of, we accept the presence of, we feel the feeling, but then we also gently let it go again and again and again. And as we do that, we are changing the habit patterns. We're training in changing the habit patterns. And it's similar, too, with the loving kindness. Some people say, well, why do we keep repeating these phrases or similar ones? You may choose. Those are the ones I've settled on. What's that about? And it's acknowledging all the different levels of our experience. And one level of experience, of course, is just there's just this constant talking in the mind, blah, 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 blah. So, and that has been conditioned over time in childhood. And sometimes we even hear voices, you know, of, oh, that's my mother's voice, that's my father's voice, that's my eighth grade teacher, you know, or my third grade teacher. So we're actually taking that reality and changing it by repeating again and again the phrases that we've chosen of loving kindness and compassion, so that we have a new habit. We've got a new tape running. So that we're caught in a traffic jam and it's so frustrating and so forth. And then suddenly we realize, oh, wait, everybody else in the cars around me are also suffering. And then we went, okay, may everyone in this traffic jam be happy and peaceful. May they be free of suffering. May they be safe. May they make it home safe and so forth. And it shifts. It's an opportunity for us to practice. It also tremendously shifts the energy, shifts our experience. We don't dwell in aversion anymore. A lot of our dwelling in aversion is just habit, really. We don't know what else to do. The mind just kind of runs in circles. So part of these loving kindness and compassion practices, repeating phrases like that, is to change the tape as well as the deeper levels of cultivating the feelings and so forth, so that the thought because there's more of a habit of a thought of kindness, that sense of being able to move out of dwelling in aversion. So much of it is really just habitual conditioning. We blame ourselves. We feel, oh, I should be better. I should have better thoughts, you know. As Stephen Levine says, big surprise, you know. Jealousy arises, competition arises, judgment arises. All of these things, they arise. It's our habit. But then we can train in seeing them and stepping out of that. And then we have some new phrases that we also, with our other kind of practice, we have some new phrases that we can train in using and repeating. So it really is a question, a lot of it is retraining. There's no blame. We just habit of mindfulness, do our mindfulness practices, and then our heart-opening practices, and retrain. I testify, you should have met me 30 years ago. One can be retrained. One can change quite a lot. These things, they do work. The techniques work. Any other questions? Yes.
Well, I want to thank you for that topic tonight, self-love, teaching ourselves. I've been working on a lot lately, so I feel pretty good to you.
Oh, good.
I also like I've never seen you before, but your demonstration of being happy. Thank you.
Thank you. This is because this practice works. I used to be very grumpy, very grumpy, very sarcastic. I'm half Irish. So sarcasm, when you grow up, is kind of an art form. Then you go out in the world and realize, oh, people don't like witty, sarcastic, biting, you know, kind of things. And so that was, so at least they do work, the, you know, over time and practice. They do. They bring happiness. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah,
hello.
I also want to thank you for doing this job. So clearly explaining things. I can testify. I've known her for 20 years. I don't recall you as being grumpy.
Well, you should have been 30. But, you know, the kitchen. We cooked together at IMS years ago. Boy, the kitchen will push your buttons. Should you think you have reached some very high level of realization, just volunteer to cook for a while and see if you've actually reached that level of equanimity. Take on the kitchen. That's sweet. Go ahead.
And then when I hear, this is so terrible, but a part of me thinks, I wish I were there, because I know that feeling when you're in the middle of a, all the crops fall away, and you're just dealing with surviving, you're dealing with each other, and you become community.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wishing that I could experience that, and thinking, well, how can Seattle have some of that and survive because I feel we need it, and there are ways, I mean, like when in a disaster, say there's, or like in a big car jam, there are ways to embrace that thinking, and it's so great to have you remind us about the love and kindness. I think also humor, or just, I think I always use like humor or play, like if nobody can move, like getting out of the car, talking to people, or sometimes I think people get out and turn on the radio and they dance.
Yeah.
And if other people, some, they don't always go with it, but you crack sort of all of our, the guards that we put up.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that's important.
So our job is compassion. And we just start here, and we cultivate compassion and loving kindness in whatever situation arises for us, and then we stretch it out and we radiate it outward, and we're not surprised if whatever arises in our reactions and so forth. We just have mercy on ourselves and on everyone, and because of our path, we know our job is cultivating compassion. We know one person that we're supposed to rescue. When you get home, just go in, walk in the bathroom, and look in the mirror. We know at least one person that we came here to take care of. So we begin with that, with compassion and loving kindness for that person. We're driving that car. And then we stretch it out from there with whatever arises. Friendliness with the difficult states so that we can transform them. And then not dwelling in aversion. So whatever we do, whether it's humor or loving kindness and so forth, aversion comes. Big surprise. But we don't dwell there. That's what makes it a path of practice, a spiritual path. We learn to see what's true, accept the way we are, accept the way other people are, but not dwell in the aversion, cultivating an ability to stretch the heart beyond that. really neat to be here with all of you and your big hearts. It's just wonderful. Yeah. Oh, aversion? Okay. Aversion is anger, fear, hatred, disappointment, sorrow, grief, frustration, anything that would push things away. So aversion, something arises and we have aversion to it. We have aversion to other people making a bunch of noise. We have aversion to politicians not doing things right. We have aversion to our suffering, the suffering of others. We have self-aversion. We criticize ourselves. We judge ourselves. We judge other people. They're not good enough. We compare. All of that. That's all aversion. And so we see it arise because it's so normal and natural. But we don't dwell there. That's what we're training ourselves on our spiritual path. See what's true. Let go. There's also greed, and we don't, that's a whole topic as well. Not to mention delusion. But here I was focusing on not dwelling in aversion. It will come up, and so many people on a spiritual path feel bad about it. But it will come up, but not to dwell there. That's our choice, mindfulness, loving kindness, compassion. See it come, big surprise, have mercy. Let it go and step into some kind of kindness, compassion for ourselves and others. That'll move us along. That'll move us along. Thank you. I think it's announcement time now.